protect your heritage, because in many ways it's unique. It's also a question of identity. I've said that to many places. Your own identity, for instance, is very often linked to what is the identity of a capital city? What is the identity of your historical sites? What do you sort of, how do you connect to it? Sometimes it's difficult, and in the case of many African countries, it will be difficult because you do have a history of colonial rule, and some of the cultural heritage comes from different layers of foreign involvement. And the question is, how do you embrace the positive issues in terms of architecture and others and have a very honest discussion on what was not okay?
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Social Hotelier podcast with me, Sam-Erik Rutman. I'm very pleased to welcome a special guest who is this time based in Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya, Nairobi. And we have met quite some time ago. In fact, we met in Thailand, where this person was based at the Embassy of Finland. So that's Ambassador Pirkka Tapiola. Now, Pirkka Tapiola is the ambassador, of course, of Finland to Kenya, Somalia, Eritrea, Seychelles, Uganda, and also a permanent representative of Finland to the United Nations Environment Programme, or also known as UNEP, and the United Nations Human Settlements Programme, UN Habitat, since September 2021. So with a long three decade of diplomacy, Ambassador Tapiola has seen the world, and I'm so very happy to, as an old friend, meet him now in Nairobi. So welcome to the show.
Great to see you, Sam-Erik. Really, really great to see you.
Well, it has been a while. We've been meeting on and off over the years, and we met last summer, which was really nice to catch up what has happened over the years. And I have to admit, I'm a little bit ignorant about Africa, and Africa is a continent, so we should not overgeneralize things here. But I think it would be very interesting, since you are well-traveled and you enjoy hotels and you like traveling and you like good food, to give that kind of insight from how you see things in the area of East Africa, where you are based. So, and when we earlier discussed, you mentioned that Africa is near. And so I think the question would be that, how does Africa's proximity to Europe shape the richness and the diversity of travel experience available to European tourists?
Well, let's start with the fact that Africa is very big, as you mentioned. I mean, if you look at the map, actually Africa, which already looks big, looks much smaller than it actually is. This is a huge continent. It's a very diverse continent. It's a very rich continent. And it's a continent with very, very many different cultures. So if you think of Africa, you can say, okay, I'll fly to Cairo. Cairo's Africa. Egypt is Africa. Tunisia's Africa. But so is Mozambique. So is South Africa. So are the Seychelles. And if you look at all of them, you will see that there's an enormous variety of things you can do. Now, when I say Africa is near, that's something which, in my job, I really, really want to underline. Because very often we talk about Africa. I mean, our sort of preconception is that, okay, Africa is somewhere far. It's a long way from here. Well, actually, the flight from Paris to Tunis, just to give you an idea, is about 2.5 hours. The flight from Frankfurt to Nairobi is about, it used to be 8 hours, now it's 9 hours because of the conflict in Sudan. So you actually have to do a little bit of a detour over the Red Sea. And yes, of course, if you go to South Africa, then you're in the sort of 10-12 hour sort of ballpark. But if you think of flying to Southeast Asia, where we met, there you're already in a much sort of, especially from Central Europe, in a much further area. And now with Russia's war of aggression against Ukraine, and the fact that we no longer fly over Russia, from Finland, for instance, it's a much longer route to Thailand. And Thailand is a country I love, so this is not against Thailand, but it's just simply a thing to retain. Another thing is that especially if you're a busy person and you need to be in contact with your office and your family and your team and so on, there is no time difference. At this moment, it is exactly the same time where you're sitting, Sam Erik, to where I'm sitting. Yes, so I mean, this really shows how near we are. Africa is Europe's closest neighbor in many ways, and this is something which is often forgotten.
Well, very good. And I have to admit that this is the first time I have a broadcast with someone. We are in the same time zone, even if we're a little bit quite far away from each other. But you're right. The perception really is that it's so far away, but in fact, it doesn't take that long. But now you cover several countries. How much do you travel out of your per year, for instance? How much time do you end up going to the different places, and that gives you the insight and the dialogues you have with the government officials and so on?
I travel quite a lot, but it depends a little bit on where I travel. It's all, I'd say, a function of what our interests are. Of course, in addition, and this is not a tourism destination, I hope it one day will be, but it certainly is not, and I'm not going to advise anybody to travel there. I go a lot to Somalia because for us, fundamentally, Somalia is not your traditional cross-accreditation country. So I would say that maybe between 8 to 12 times a year I would go to Somalia. Sometimes I go once a month, sometimes once every 3 months. Then I've had a couple of weeks where I've gone twice. So, I mean, that gives you an idea. But we as Finns, we have a big Somali diaspora. We have a lot of interest there. It's a very fragile state. We are involved in state building. Then Uganda, near, of course, a very, very important country. We have political consultations. I'm going there in a couple of weeks. Again, I was there a couple of times last autumn. Eritrea, one of the most fascinating countries, but rather difficult in its visa policy, and with a capital which looks like Italy in the 1930s, and which has really been preserved, that I'd say a couple of times a year. To Seychelles, probably I'd want to go more often, but let's be honest, I'll go maybe once or twice a year. So I'd say that every month I'm somewhere. Plus also, Kenya is a big, important country. So I travel a lot inside Kenya as well. So I'd say I'm pretty much on the road. And then with the UN jobs, with the UN sort of role I have. So I'll be in Stockholm and Geneva in May as well. So I'd say pretty much on the road.
Very good. Okay, so since you're covering all these different countries, I just want to have a taste of understanding of a little bit about food culture. Where are the areas where you enjoy most, or you find some of the very ethnic cuisines that are something that maybe everyday person doesn't know about over here in Finland?
Well, I mean, in many ways, I would say that East Africa has probably a very, very rich, and one could say that East Africa has a very rich culinary culture, going from the not that exciting always to the very exciting. And especially if you look at the Swahili coast, the coast which has influences at one stage from Portugal, but mainly from Oman, from South Asia as well, and you look at the Swahili cuisine, which is sort of has hints of Arabic, has hints of mainstream African, has hints of Indian, with curries, with sort of chapatis. Chapatis are very common here. So that there you see that you really have a very, very rich culinary culture. Kenyans, by and large, are very carnivore. So I would say that you can get good vegetarian food, but this is a very carnivore society. Then you go a little bit to what I'd call the pasta belt, Africa's pasta belt, and there you see the Italian influence in Eritrea, a little bit in Somalia as well, where you have a certain traditional love of Italian food, especially Eritrea here, and then probably you will change planes in Ethiopia, which I don't cover, but which is an old empire, and Ethiopian cuisine with its spices, with its injera, with it, is really fabulous. So you really have just here a very, very rich palate. And of course, you have a lot of international food, and surprisingly, what really, really surprises me is that Asian fusion is very, very popular, especially here in Nairobi. And some of the best restaurants in town have Asian influences. There is, for instance, one which is a mixture between Japanese, Pan-Asian, and Peruvian, which is really, really quite exciting, where you sort of get everything from excellent ceviche to sort of good duck, to good prawns, to sushi, which of course is a food of fashion approximately everywhere. So, I mean, you have a very rich palate, and it is a very vibrant.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I mean, that's something that's new to me, that this fusion aspect of cuisine, or getting sort of the Peruvian aspect, or Japanese, if you will.
It's certainly not indigenous, but I've just noticed that for some funny reason, Nairobi has quite a good amount of interesting fusion restaurants.
That's very nice. How is the fashion and the arts and scene in Nairobi, for instance? Are there a lot of cultural events going on, how fashion designs and so on? Because I've been watching on social media, I see once in a while, the fashion designers from there, and who have been making a huge impact nowadays into Europe also.
Well, there is, of course, a fashion scene, a very colourful one compared to ours. There is an art scene, which is actually quite exciting. Kenyan, yes, but also with Ugandan artists, some absolutely fantastic Sudanese artists who you can find in galleries like the Circle Art Gallery here and some others. And there is now very much a Pan-African push to promote African artists. And that, I think, is very, very welcome. If you look at the amount of galleries, it will still be quite a bit less than what you're used to in many European capitals. But it's a growing scene. It's an exciting scene. And I don't think I don't think that it's a coincidence that Lonely Planet, for instance, for 2024, declared Nairobi as the hot city to visit.
Very interesting. Yeah, I can see that, because I can see that there are travelers who, yes, maybe they want to see, go to the safari for the once in a lifetime, and of course, how many times do you like to see the lion? Maybe at least once, but maybe there's some other things that you will enjoy. So that's where I was thinking about interest our viewers, is of course the other part of that. Why? What is the good reason to come? Usually, you go for a good experience, art, cultural, and the culinary experience, and you very nicely pointed out that there's, even if you just come for that reason, because some people enjoy actually urban holidays. I have to admit, I'm one of them, that I like city holidays, and so I always look at whether it's Lonely Planet or I look at somewhere else to get in the hot tips, where to stay and where to eat and what to see, and somehow that gives you changes you a little bit. But when you have time on your hand when you're in Nairobi, what are the kind of places that you personally enjoy visiting for a good meal?
Well, let me first of all say that I would still, if you come, even if Africa is close, if you come here, I would combine Nairobi with something else in Kenya or something else in the region. And there are a lot of really exciting things happening in the region. And very often people do come that there'll be a couple of days in Nairobi, and then they will go for 3-4 days on safari, and then they might go to the Swahili coast or the Indian Ocean coast, which is very beautiful. And I have to say, sorry again, the beaches are some of the most beautiful I've seen. And also, what you don't have And that's a very, very nice thing. And unfortunately, and we were working a lot with ASEAN earlier on this, but that you had in Southeast Asian beaches more and more plastic pollution. That problem is being tackled. Here, if you go on a beach, you don't see that plastic pollution yet. And Kenya, for instance, has a very strong and firm ban on plastic bags. But also, I don't know if it's the currents or so, but the beaches are relatively pristine and relatively clean. So what do I do in Nairobi? Well, I'm, as said, there is, and we'll talk, I hope, about security a little bit, because that's one thing I need to underline to people. I go to galleries. I go to some museums, and when I have guests, I take people to some museums, and there is, of course, if you, all romantics who've seen Africa, they will have seen the Meryl Streep, Robert Redford film, Out of Africa, based on a book by Karen Blixen. There is a part in Nairobi called Karen, and that's named after Karen Blixen, and her house is there, and the history is there. It's a small museum, but it's really, really lovely. You can go and feed giraffes at the quite near there at the at a sort of giraffe center, and they're quite cute little animals. Well, not little, rather big ones, and you will be able to then find a number of very, very nice restaurants around, both in Karen and elsewhere. You just have to know where to go. And the cuisine here is developing all the time. Already in the 2.5 years I've been here, so while I was maybe not that fond of the restaurant scene when I arrived, I'm starting to be quite excited about it. And the restaurant scene has sort of evolved. In terms of hotels, you have new and new hotel rooms being built all the time. New five-star hotels opening. There's a new Hilton Curio Collection place which has African influences just around the corner from where I live. You have a JW Marriott opening. You have had a Kempinski for a long time. And then there are some boutique hotels around Karen again and so on. So, I mean, the choice is getting bigger and bigger, which means also that the prices are getting a little bit more reasonable. And very often, the bigger chains, they will also have a safari lodge attached. Yes. One thing which you should always remember about Nairobi is that this is the only city in the world which, even if you wouldn't be such a nature sort of tourist, note the lines behind me, you do have the Nairobi National Park. So actually, on the territory of the capital city, you have a huge national park. You have everything but elephants. So from lions to giraffes and so on, you rent a guide and you rent a car and they show you around. You can drive with your own car as well, but I would recommend getting a driver with a specialized car, because they're actually in contact with each other to say, hey, I saw a lion there, let's go, come on. And I usually, when I've gone there, I see everything. So you can actually do a half a day safari and still go out to a normal restaurant to have dinner. But as I said, if you go further afield, then in Tsavo and especially Masai Mara, you have everything from relatively modest accommodation to really super luxury glamping. I've done that as well, which is sort of quite nice, and the cuisines are very good. And some say that the best hotels in Kenya will be there. And then, as I said, you have the beach, where I was just 2 weeks ago, 1.5 weeks ago, spending a weekend with my daughter who's visiting, and I have to say, the Serena near Mombasa was excellent, and it was really, really nice to just be by the sea. So, I mean, the variety is there. If you look at level of services, it is not quite what maybe you're used to in East Asia, that I have to admit, it's not what you're used to in the Gulf. But you have a lot of charming places and you can have a great holiday. And if you go, for instance, near Mombasa, then you have a lot of the Portuguese and Omani history and so on. And then, of course, you can fly to neighboring Tanzania, again, not my country, one of my countries, and go to Zanzibar, which has a fantastically interesting history, and you can do either beach or historical tourism. So, I mean, there's a lot of variety, yes.
I mean, I would say that I've been looking at the glamping scene overall, and I would say that I had a friend of mine who we discussed over a podcast about sort of intense 2 or 3 day luxury experiences that you can have when you are in Kenya or wherever you go. I mean, these are becoming actually the most expensive per night experience that you can imagine. There's nothing less than 5,000 US per night that you have to expect. Well, of course, it's all the full board. There's obviously the security, but it's a very refined and detailed and intense experience that you can have for a few days, and those are still very, very popular. But I think it is not for everyone, so that's why I'm interested always at...
Those are really those once-in-a-lifetime things. And remember that in addition to that, you still have the park fees and you have the conservancy fees and so on and so forth. Of course, we're a bit lucky living here because if you're a resident, when I mentioned glamping and civil servants, so I have to underline that if you are a resident, you do often get much better deals. But that's basically for the rooms which the rich and shameless visiting did not sort of book ahead of time.
I understand. So let's touch a little bit on, to get that off our discussion about the safety concerns, because of course this is a topic that concerns everyone who travels. That how do safety concerns impact European perception of traveling to Africa, and what is being done really to ensure that the travelers have a safe visit? I think the responsibility, of course, is on the travelers by themselves, that they don't do silly things. But maybe you can, what are your thoughts, and maybe you can give some little bit of tips what to do and what to not to do when they're visiting.
Well, I'll start by saying don't do anything stupid. I mean, Kenya, for instance, is a country with a median age of 19. And that means that 1 million young people come to the labor market every year. And even the president has admitted that at this moment only 200,000 will get sort of regulated legal employment. So you have a lot of people who are trying to make ends meet. They're hustling. They have their lives are not that easy. And that, of course, will lead to a certain amount of street crime, pickpocketing, robberies, so on and so forth. And if you are a European, you do tend to, and any Kenyan will tell you this, you unfortunately do tend to stand out. And if you're standing on the street and you take your mobile phone and here you are sort of looking at it and so on, you will not have that mobile phone for very long. I'll just say that very open. You won't have it. I mean, it's clear. You may have somebody pointing some kind of an arm. You may have a motorbike just coming and grabbing it from your hand. So rule number one, if you must walk on the street, you need to know exactly where you can walk, and that's a very small amount of places, unfortunately. If you are with a local friend and so on, it's probably going to be a little bit easier, but it's still something I wouldn't advise. So, I mean, in a way, if you're an urban tourist, you'll just have to accept, in a place like Kenya, for instance, Seychelles is different, of course, but you'll have to accept that you have to have a certain amount of personal infrastructure. And that means you have a car, an Uber, or a car and a driver, an Uber, or a organized tour, and you're taken from one place to another. A taxi. Taxis, well, no, I would say Ubers rather, because we have, for instance, security. The embassy's view is that Ubers are safe here. And you go from place A to place B. You go from your to your destination, you see what you want to see, you don't go wandering around. And that's unfortunately, I hope it'll change one day. It is much safer than, for instance, some places further south. Like South Africa, some certain places have a rather bad reputation in security, but we all, I'm an ambassador, I have a consular section, don't do anything stupid. Don't go wandering around, please. Plan your day, decide where you go, take transport. Go and eat at reputable restaurants, find out where the quality is good and so on and so forth, because, for instance, one of the things somebody warned me was that certainly if you think that it's maybe more exciting to go to a slightly more, let's say, authentic, quote-unquote, place, you have a lot of good authentic places, but authentic, quote-unquote, the alcohol, for instance, which you're served, may not be quite legit, it may be counterfeit, and so on and so forth. So, I mean, these are the kind of things which you have to take into consideration. Don't go for scams. You may be scammed. I wouldn't say that Kenya is particularly bad, but you have a certain amount of warning alarm bells in every big city, plus a bit, add a bit, find out, read your embassy travel advisories, and know where you're going. Listen also to news and information. I'm not saying that Kenya is particularly terrorism sort of prone. You have Somalia nearby, you have the coastal areas, you have some influence of a terrorist group called Al-Shabaab. On the whole, I have to say, nowadays, if you're in Europe, you're under a risk of a terrorist attack everywhere in the world. We've seen Paris, we have seen Brussels, we've seen others. So I don't want to start saying that, they're here in Kenya, it will be... Yes, you've had some quite nasty attacks, but they are actually 10 years ago. They're actually quite a long time ago. So don't panic. But again, follow the news. Follow the security advisories. The threat levels change. Yeah. Don't go... if there is a part of the country where your embassy tells you not to go...
Yeah, there's a reason for it.
It's not for nothing. It's not because we're saying that, we want the ambassador to be able to enjoy this part of the country without any tourists. No, I would not be going there either, because I do follow our own travel advisory rules. Or if I have to with work, then I have security arrangements with me. So this is just, don't go being sort of excited that, there's this famous slum area or sort of township and so on, Kibera, for instance. Why don't I just go and look around what's happening here and so on? You might if you have somebody who takes you on a formal tour. You have walking tours in the city center. You may know somebody who goes to these places all the time and they may be able to help you. So I'm not saying that sit in your hotel room and be panicky. Don't. Then you can just as well sit at home. This is you go traveling in the world. Just use common sense. Listen to it.
Very good. So lots of good advice. And thank you very much for that. How well known are Finns in Kenya? Are there any sports people who are well known for some reason? Are there any activities that you want to mention?
There's one which always comes up when you say, "Hi, I'm the Finnish ambassador. I'm from Finland." Oh, rally drivers, Ari Vatanen, Kankkunen, now of course Kalle Rovanperä, who again won the safari rally in Naivasha. Naivasha is a place which I didn't mention. Very beautiful place, but less than 100 kilometers from here with a beautiful lake, good for weekend visits. But we are known, we Finns are known as sort of the flying Finns, the country with a very long sort of tradition of rally drivers, and I suppose we have really won the safari rally many times. And there's been three safari rallies when I've been here, and the same Finnish person, Kalle Rovanperä, won it each time. So we are known for that. We're known, I think, for through development cooperation. We're known for being a European, Northern European country, which has not colonized anybody, ever, which I think is a very big asset in a country such as Kenya as well. So, I mean, I'd say Finland has a reputation which runs from positive to neutral, but never negative.
Good.
Education is, of course, one field.
I want to touch on an area which I'm personally interested in, and many people are, who are these days, where people are traveling, they think about sustainability. And what role does sustainable tourism play in preserving Africa's natural wonders and cultural heritage for the future generations? Because we know that tourism is not always sustainable, because people travel and they may leave things behind them, and there's a footprint there. But I think how do you see that, and how is that kind of what is the attitude towards sustainability in the area where you are in generally, maybe in East Africa?
I would say that attention to sustainability is very, very big, and His Excellency the President William Ruto actually hosted last September an African climate summit, where he was really sort of coming up with some quite sort of forward-leaning ideas. Let's look at Kenya's energy production. 92% of Kenya's energy or electricity comes from renewable energy sources. 92%. I think that many of us would really need to strive to that. You have certain problems with the distribution in terms of the distribution network, but that's really wonderful. From wind to solar to geothermal, which is very, very big, big here. But you see more and more hotels, more safari camps especially. I mean, if you're in the middle of somewhere there, sustainability becomes a big thing. Not only does it become something which you do ideologically, which many do, and there are safari camps which are completely sustainable, but it also makes some sense. Now, we're here nearly at the equator. Now, you may think that I'm in a very hot climate. I'm not, actually, because Nairobi, the coast is hot, but Nairobi is about 1.8 kilometers from sea level. So it's got one of the most wonderful climates in the world. It's never too hot. It's never too cold. This is pretty wonderful. But there is sun. There's a lot of sun. So, for instance, you see more and more safari camps, which will run on solar energy, batteries to maintain that solar energy. And it's, of course, a question of sustainability, and it's a great marketing issue as well. But it's also, what's easier? Bring loads of diesel, put sort of long electricity connections, or try to be off-grid and do it yourself. I mean, so you will see a very strong fundamental sort of push towards sustainability. Now, Kenya has also been in sort of the forefront in really trying to be a partner for us, because in many cases, many countries on this continent will say, now this is unfair. You, the West, the industrialized world, you polluted, and now you want us to be sustainable. I think there's a big truth in that as well. And we are working on our sustainability agenda. But the Kenyans, and together with the president, they really put a narrative there saying, no, we have to look at climate financing, we have to look at others and so on. But it is not confrontational. It is, how do we really work together? Right. And that's where Kenya is really a leader on the continent.
Very good. Okay, that's very, very, very good. I think that is a interesting, all what you mentioned about the sustainability and the responsibility. And also, I think, as a travelers, we have a responsibility towards the place we are going, and also to help to preserve the environment, but also to ask questions. If when we go to a hotel, ask them, well, you say you are sustainable. Could you please explain what are the sustainable measures you are taking care of? Because I think this is what people are starting to do now. They start to ask those questions because they are worried about the greenwash. And the more and more hotels are promoting themselves as sustainable, there will be guests who are in their early 20s or late 20s who are coming very happy, and they will come and ask any staff they meet in the hotel about what ways are you sustainable. So that's how, where things are going these days.
Absolutely, absolutely. And older generations as well, I mean, the sustainability agenda has been there for a long time. And of course, Nairobi is the world's environmental capital. Oh, we have UNEP here. We have the United Nations Environmental Programme. So Nairobi really wants to underline its role as the world's environmental capital.
Very good. The countries you are covering are, you obviously focused quite a bit on Kenya and mentioned Uganda. Are there any where you see in the future that we could see that the tourism eventually would be an area that could be developing? You mentioned one area which is still living in the 30s. Maybe one of these days this could be the place where you could have a very unique experience.
Maybe one of these days, and as I said, it's not a very easy place to get into, but the Italian tourism is growing more and more because of old historical ties as well and so on. Eritrea is a very beautiful country, and I think that there will be in the future loads of potential. What I think is important is that, and that's the good thing that, and this is something which I'm saying to all governments everywhere where I am, you have a lot of cultural heritage, you have a lot of beautiful architecture. Mombasa as well, Zanzibar, others.
Very good.
Protect that, conserve that. Yes, the UNESCO has done a lot in sort of declaring places like Asmara, World Heritage Sites, like Zanzibar, Stone Town in Zanzibar, like Fort Jesus in Mombasa and so on. And it's very important, the old town of Mombasa, it's very important that these are kept. And I think that there's one thing that when things do open up, it is important that the values are there. When tourism opens up more, because I'm not talking about societies which are closed or more open or things like that, I'm just saying that where tourism is not yet very present or where the market economy is still maybe making strides in the future, do not destroy these places. Open them up very sort of responsibly and protect your heritage, because in many ways it's unique. It's also a question of identity. I've said that to many places. Your own identity, for instance, is very often linked to what is the identity of a capital city? What is the identity of your historical sites? How do you connect to it? Sometimes it's difficult, and in the case of many African countries, it will be difficult because you do have a history of colonial rule, and some of the cultural heritage comes from different layers of foreign involvement. And the question is, how do you embrace the positive issues in terms of architecture and others and have a very honest discussion on what was not okay in others should not come to other people's countries and start ruling them. We see that in Europe at this moment. That should not happen. We need to respect local cultures and local history. And at the same time, you have some of this sort of cultural heritage which actually comes as a result of colonialism. How do you find the right balance in approaching it?
Very good. I have one final question for you. It has been a very interesting discussion we've had. Besides what we talked about, what are the trends in Africa do you see happening, particularly in hospitality, that we should pay attention to? Some particular trends that you notice now, because you're right in the hot spot, if you will, that you see restaurant-wise, you mentioned some fusion and so on, but anything else that you'd like to mention?
Well, I'd say that the hospitality industry is growing constantly. I mean, you have already the sort of safari experiences, which I mentioned. Of course, I am also ambassador to the Seychelles, and of course, Seychelles is one of the most luxurious tourism destinations you could have, but let's put it that way, they're very good at marketing themselves. I would say, look at the coastal area. What I do see is that you will have more and more luxury tourism coming up, and you will have more and more high-class hotels. And I don't foresee, however, a big sort of outburst of, how should I say, masterism here as well. So I do hope, and I see that that is the case, but I do hope for the sake of the sustainability we talked about, is that from one side you need to have tourism which is accessible to people from Europe and others. At the same time, you need to have tourism which is of a bit more high class and which sort of does not overrun the places where you are. And I'd say that that trend will be there, that I think that you will see that that you will have a upgrading of many tourism facilities, and some of it needed. You will have more flight connections, I believe, also directly to the coast in Mombasa. And hopefully the sort of high quality tourism will not just be there in the game reserves and in the Masai Mara, but will start also being in different places. There are so many beautiful places here, but at the same time, let's hope it won't be overpopulated either, because both you and I have seen what happens when tourism becomes too mass.
Thanks very much for joining this discussion with my friend Ambassador Pirkka Tapiola. We discussed the proximity of Europe to Africa and how it shapes the travel experience for European tourists. Well, Pirkka highlighted the diversity and richness of the Africa, emphasizing that it's not a monolithic continent. He also shared his insights on the food culture in East Africa, the fashion art scene in Nairobi, and the importance of sustainable tourism in preserving Africa's natural wonders and cultural heritage. But also, he provided some excellent tips on safety for travelers and discussed the future trends in the hospitality industry in Africa. So if you like this show, just do me a favor and write a small comment before you leave. It would mean the world to me. And I look forward to welcoming you again to the next episode.